Welcome back, everyone. Desert Tones, going again. And we're at least like one consecutive month in now. So that's like a semi-good sign, right?
Yeah, that's huge.
We're back on the tracks.
Huge if true.
So, and today is not necessarily like super focused on any one in particular thing. We're just going to kind of recap a couple of like music-related news stuff. We just had NAMM like a month ago, mm-hmm. or like I guess a few weeks now.
Yeah.
And just kind of like spitball a couple other things there too. It's going to be some music, probably some not. And yeah, kind of go through some of that.
Yeah.
But what's everyone been on? Let's
see. NAMM.
Yeah, NAMM was cool. There's definitely a lot of cool stuff that I saw there.
NAMM.
It seemed, for whatever reason, like more live, even just as someone watching stuff on social media, like mm-hmm. this year than, I don't know, I can't fully remember last year, I guess, but like a lot more of the people that I like follow on social media were like present for it. So yeah. It seemed like a little more.
It seemed active. Like the most active since like post COVID.
Yeah.
It seems like it's like really kind of getting back to normal, which is pretty cool. Yeah, that would definitely be a dream to attend sometime, but I watched an interesting video of a guy breaking down the expense to go.
Oh, really?
And like yeah. how he figured out which hotel to stay at and lodging and all that stuff. And I thought that was interesting. And he was just kind of weighing the pros and cons. But yeah, something that came that's been getting a lot of attention is the new Fender Standard Series, which is their first line coming out of Indonesia.
Oh, the Indonesian stuff.
Yeah, which yeah. I guess is right. Fills the gap between Squire and the Player series.
Yeah.
And looks like the pretty standard offering across the line, priced in like $600. Is cool. My first guitar was a Squire, so it's cool to make a Fender a little more accessible.
Yeah, I've seen that people are pretty mixed about the specs and stuff. Like after I saw the announcement, I was kind of interested to see what people were saying about it. And if you look on forums, which I wouldn't advise anybody to do ever, but people are like, well, yeah, but you could get a Squire. They're like nicer Squires that are actually better spec'd than these are. And it's, more desirable for so-and-so reasons and stuff like that. But, their higher end Squires are like very specific kind of models, and they fit very specific kind of like niche roles. Some of them are like anniversary spec or a variety of other things. Whereas these are like entry level Fender branded classic design and configuration, stuff, right? So
yeah,
I think it does fill that void. I've always thought that it was a little strange though that historically what had been their most affordable line that was not a Squire, the Player, and then now the Player 2, and those have just progressively gotten a little more expensive, especially for the models that they've managed to put somewhat interesting things on, or like they've done some limited runs of a few different players, particularly the Player 2s. But like you're kind of looking at a grand there every time, and so having something that's not that expensive but still kind of checks the boxes of like what you would want to have on your first guitar or your first like Fender guitar is cool. I bought that Player Tele, and I've modded it, and I couldn't even tell that it was a Player guitar. I mean, it's great, right? So
yeah,
especially after a setup and modding a couple things, you're rocking and rolling pretty good. I think that Ibanez came out with I don't know what the name of it is, but they came out with a pretty affordable AZ variation.
Yeah,
that's going.
Mm.
That's kind of in the same price range, and those look really cool too.
Yeah, I think that the AZ stuff has been some of their more popular instruments that they've put out in a few years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have the data for that, but just given, how popular those seem to have gotten, and you see more and more of them, I think it's been kind of a hit, right? And especially the more expensive ones, it seems like they're trying to fill that like niche of like, you know, a blend of classic and modern, kind of like a Sur would, right? Yeah. But just with a brand that is more readily available, which is cool. They did put out a few somewhat interesting aces. They refreshed the classic 500, 505s, and so online. And those are always good. But I think they also put out mini ukes for the first time.
Yeah.
Or something. So that's interesting.
I think something like
that. I'm going to buy one right now.
Yeah, PRS has put out some new models. They've done the Swamp Ash specials. Oh, they came out with they brought back the standard model, which was more readily available in the early days. And it's just a solid, I don't think there's a top on it. But they come in these like really dark, it's like a dark blue and a gunmetal gray, red and black. And those look really slick
too. Oh yeah, my buddy Ben was telling me about those. Like pretty cool.
Yeah. And I think most of them are carrying the new pickups. If we hadn't said before, like most of the S2 models are shipping with USA pickups and hardware, or at least some of it is. So, you know, that definitely makes a lot of sense, especially for the price point.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely always cool to look at all the new treats for this year. Nothing in particular I'm going to act on today, but it's lots of cool stuff to look at and see what's going on. And I also just interested in what everybody thinks about it too.
Yeah. I would say maybe the most interesting thing for me, at least that I saw and like paid attention to was Art Glass announced the Kamos pedal.
Yeah.
Which I don't know what that is. You'll have to tell me.
So it is it's not like a signature pedal. They claim it was made in collaboration with Amos Heller. And the only thing that I really know him from is that he played with Taylor Swift, which is interesting. But this, it's a parallel signal, it's a looper. It's got a sub octave in it, and it's got a bit of drive on it. So it's a filter, it's a drive pedal, and then it's also like a bit of a preamp too. So it's, and then it has like a lot of the classic Guitar Glass things, like, you know, how they handle blend and the varying level of like effects, like the varying level of effects mod, like, you know, how much of that effect as you want in, but then that they also have the turn grid off, turn grid on. It's the same like pedal format as like the Ultras are, like, so as the Alpha Omega Ultra or the D7K Ultra. Actually, I don't have a clear line on if it's going to be readily available to the public. I would assume that it is, but I haven't been able to find like a release date for it yet. But that was interesting and it was unexpected. They had teased that they were going to announce something. And I was like, you know, kind of wondering what it might have been. Was that right? So, the other thing that I was going to say was, I think that these have been around for a while, but I only recently became aware of them at NAMM was the Dark Rays from Ernie Ball. So it's like the Stingray, but with
like hard glass electronics in it.
Mm.
And that's really crazy. Normally it's just got a single pickup in it instead of the dual that most Kingrays have.
Mm-hmm.
And of course it's like blacked out and stuff, which is interesting.
That is cool.
Yeah. They came out with the Corey Wong signature Music Man.
Oh, that's right.
Stingray guitar. Pretty, I think that's correct. That's pretty interesting. And I just haven't kept up with the Sterling line, but they've expanded pretty significantly. I think Rabia Sig just came out in a Sterling variant. Mm. And I think they might make a Majesty too, the Petrucci.
Oh.
And so, you know, it's like, I remember those being like $400 beater guitars, and I think now they're like, you know, pushing a grand. So,
yeah.
But in line with everything else, I guess.
It's the player too.
That semi hollow that I had a few years back at Eastman,
mm-hmm.
That brand, they came out with their Fullerton line, which are some interesting kind of look like Strats and Tellies, but they have like semi hollow shaped size bodies, but with Strat and Tele electronics. It was pretty interesting.
Hmm.
I've seen quite a few people in my algorithm playing those, but that's cool. Well, I've got some good Tellies and Strats, so I'll pass.
Good for now.
No. Good for now. Tomorrow's another day.
I didn't see it at NAMM, but I probably just missed it. But I like actually only within like the last week to week and a half realized that PV put out a new line of pedals, and one of them is a preamp of the VTM amp that I love. And so it's like pretty cool that they've got like this PV VTM preamp pedal that they offer now, which has, was like the same 8 dip switches that they had on the original amp. It was like gain one, like 2 levels of gain staging. It was like additional compression and like some other like EQ modifications that are on it. And I thought it was just really cool. I'm the kind of person that would always prefer just to have the amp instead anyways, but this is just, was really interesting to see that they put out, like, kind of interested to hear how they sound.
Is this the Decade
2? So there's a bunch of them. There was like, they did a Bandit, they did a Decade, they did Session, but it's just called the VTM preamp. And it's like a brown with like brass or like tan cream colored screening on it. So, but it's that's pretty cool.
They look really cool. That retro 90s look.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the PV head that you have, Jared? The mini one?
It's the Valve King 20 amp.
Nice. Is that like a high?
20 watt.
Is that like a middle of the road voicing? Is it like, it's not like a ultra high gain one, is it?
No, it's not.
Mm.
But it's also not like a vintage either.
Yeah, it's like.
Yeah.
Nice.
That actually used to belong to Joey.
That's right.
Yep.
Beautiful.
It's the circle of life of gear in our little strange family. but yeah, I mean, to be frank, I didn't really see a lot of stuff there that I would want to buy, but it was a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I wish I was a little more tapped into the synth space and like what they were coming out with their like keyboards and stuff. That's always like a pretty big deal there. I know that a lot of stuff got announced, but I just like don't know enough about it to say, oh my God, you know, this is cool. And besides, everything that I use is virtual anyway. So like, I'm not having a bunch of like synths in my office, you know?
Yeah.
And I think Roland might've put out a variation of their e-kit that it was already announced, but they like demoed it there and stuff, and it's like a slightly less expensive but kind of strange crossover between acoustic drums and electric drums, so it's like very shallow shells but with like padding all around them and stuff. So it should have a comparable feel, but still like an e-kit overall. I think I was talking to Jason from Hubbard's about it actually a while back.
So, shout out Jason.
Yeah, hell yeah, Jason. Unless it was not him and he's hearing this, and then I'm sorry. I've just gotten screwed up here.
It wasn't talked to Nam. I don't know why I'm just like coming to all these other ones that I think were, this one was announced like a couple months ago. But that new Abassi pedal, the compressor, like the micro aggressor,
yeah.
is like interesting to me because I know that Tosin Abassi and like a couple other people that have ran the Bogner Harlow a lot, that I like a lot. I know that he used that a lot, and this one has similar named controls, and the marketing for it sounds very similar to the way that they marketed the Harlow. So I feel like they probably took a lot of points from the Harlow pedal and did their own spin on it. So like, I'd be interested in trying something like that. It's like $250, so it's like not cheap, but it's cool, and like all the demos I've heard of people using it sound like pretty cool. It's like, I think, one additional control beyond what you would normally get, but even like down to the tilt style EQ that it has, it's like very similar to what the Harlow does. And then again,
the bloom
thing is like labeled to be very user friendly, and I think they take a nod to that old one. So it's interesting. I'd be interested in checking that out.
Yeah, I saw the clip of Spyro.
Oh yeah,
demoing it. That guy's insane.
That guy's nuts. That guy's a monster. Yeah.
Spyro Agnew?
Deucius?
Spyro Deucius.
I don't
know. Deucius, I hardly knew he is.
There was another guy I saw that did a demo with it that was also like really sick.
Spyro Agnew was vice president under Nixon. Not the same guy.
I think it might be a little different. Nah, I can't name, but that was a cool pedal. I can't really think of anything else that was too crazy that I remember. No. Apparently Bare Knuckle is supposed to be doing something like kind of cool news somewhat soon. They had like, God, and I don't know all the people's names. It's like Connor. Yeah, the guy who plays the Scramberg stuff. Yeah. And then
he plays a half step up just to give everybody a hard time.
And then, I don't know all those guys' names, but there's another guy I saw. I follow, funnily enough, and I don't remember his name, but
yeah, they've really expanded their line of signature products for sure.
Yeah. So I would assume maybe it's something in the realm of like a new line of stuff as opposed to just,
I don't know what the name of, Spirit Box, what his set is called. Mike Stringer.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Either. I don't really know, like I couldn't find any like real information on it, like whenever they first announced it. So like maybe by now there's something out there where that tells you.
Halcyons.
Halcyon, okay.
Sounds huge, not muddy, cleans up nice. Takes pedals well. Cutting. But well intended.
Warm. Nice metal. Grunt. A lot of grunt.
Yeah, I can't find anything on it.
Does not sound like a fat kid pumping at the gym.
So what's really funny is if you look at the announcement, or not really an announcement, but there's a picture of the box that somebody, or that Fluff posted on Instagram, I guess, that got picked up by Seven String, and somebody said, you know, hey, these are not confirmed yet, but I'm I'm guessing that they're going to be coming out. And the top comment is...
This is before NAMM?
This was January 23rd of 2025. Okay. So right afterward.
They had a demo at NAMM.
Oh, okay.
Well, I don't know. I don't remember when NAMM was. That's why I'm asking.
I think that it is that there was not anything on the Paranuckle site.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
But he says, I'm going to guess it's tight, but not thin. Mid forward and punchy, but not honky. Yep. Which is a slur, I think. And bright and aggressive, but without being harsh. It probably gives Mike everything he needs to play in Spirit Box.
I think that was what I was trying to quote. Pretty good.
Rounder bobbins equals rounder tone.
That's true. Which is a fact.
Yeah, that is a fact.
Rabia has a pretty... he's got Strat Tele and humbucker sets.
Yeah.
It'll be really cool to try those. It'll really be cool to try the poly mass and the poly PAFs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet those are really sweet.
Yeah. I remember when the Blackhawks came out.
Yes.
It was like 10 or 11
I specifically
years
remember because they were announced with like very little information.
Yeah.
Like, that was announced about them. And there was like maybe like a demo that wasn't like really official or like in a high quality sense of any sort. And I remember, I'm pretty sure it was Jameson, shout out Jameson, who like made a post about it. It was like, it was something to the end of like, I'm definitely getting these or like the new game changer or something like that. I was like, oh, I felt really bad about it afterwards. But in that moment, I was like, dude, just hang on a second, man. Like these were just announced. We barely know anything about these yet. I love you, by the way, Jameson.
It could have anthrax on it. I just don't know.
You probably remember that too, but it was just funny because it was.
And he went on to get the impulses, which are
look
similar.
Yeah, Josh Smith, Northlands.
Yeah,
but it was. I think that was like one of the first examples of like where. Maybe the Aftermath was the first one that came before the Blackhawks, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it seemed like that's just what I saw happening on like 7string.org and like all this stuff was like new one would get announced. It would be used in some sort of context by people that we know. And then everyone was like, oh, it's crazy. It's like so good or whatever. And then, yeah, I don't know. I have good intentions. Just know that.
Yeah. Well, that's all right. I know that he likes it rough.
So. That he does. Any recent shows that you've played, Dylan?
Yeah, so this weekend I got back, or I just got back from Albuquerque. Went up there this weekend and did a couple of shows. I guess really my first ones, just kind of playing in the way setting that I do now.
Mm-hmm.
On Saturday, played at Noisy Water Winery there in Old Town. And then ran over to Tractor Brewing in Knob Hill. And yeah, there were good shows and good turnout. My brother came out, shout out Brandon, and a couple other guys came through, and it was a really good time. I hope that's my foot in the door and I can go back up there in the future because it's cool to play for a new audience. And
yeah,
definitely playing different places is really on my list of things to do this year. So I was glad to start strong there. And prior to that, I don't think I'd really done a performance since Earth Brothers played up there in 2017. Hard to believe it's been that long ago. But yeah, I had a good run up there and we went to the zoo on Sunday and the weather was nice and it was a good time.
Yeah, the only problem is that it was a town that he had already
explored.
Yeah. So
Now had it been a new town, this would have been the perfect experience.
Yeah. Like when I went to Bisbee, you know, it was crazy. I just had a compass in every hand. And
yeah.
wishing one hand and compass in the other. See where you end up, pal.
Yeah, I think it's really exciting to get to play up there, right? Because for the longest time, we always thought, like, this is the pinnacle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in our little world down in Carlsbad. Yeah. And we thought, man, if we get to play in Albuquerque, we've made it.
And to clarify, like, you know, I'm playing in the corner of a bar or a winery. I'm not playing at the launch pad or the Sunshine Theater or anything like that. But
yeah, but still, like, it, you know, presumably the amount of people that would be through there or the type of people that would be through there are just, you know, different. And there's a little more going on there, right?
Yeah.
Like, and it's new.
Yeah. So
that's what's fun about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely a good run. And then there's some other concerts that are actually going to be coming through Albuquerque in the next couple of months. I guess we hadn't had the chance privately to talk about it, but we did see the announcement that BT Bam was coming in May.
Yeah, so I haven't actually seen that.
I haven't either. Okay. Do they have Dusty with them again?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Oh, he's not with them? Because it seems like they kind of made up. Oh yeah, on May 5th, they'll be coming through there. Are they playing Colors 2 all the way through? What's the deal there?
What you got over there?
You know, I had tickets to go see them play in Phoenix, and then okay, so no, they're gonna play Coma, Ecliptic, and Alaska all the way through on those shows. So that would really be something.
Yeah, those guys are insane. I don't know like that many bands that can do that.
No. Like, and they just kind of do it like
they just
every time.
Always are like from front to back, like multiple shows. Like it's insane.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever seen the meme of those like jeans that have like the chair legs in the back and you can sit down. It's pants that become a chair. You need that for sure.
Yeah. So right when the pandemic started, they were supposed to be doing a show where they were playing the entirety of the Great Misdirect all mm-hmm. the way through, mm-hmm. which that is maybe it's not my favorite album, but it's really high up there. And they postponed it and then they postponed it again, and then they postponed it to a time where I just couldn't go, and that was the last time I was going to see them. I think I've seen them 5 or 6 times now. So this would be cool to go to for sure. I think Coma is a pretty good album, actually. It was really hard to follow up Parallax 2.
Yeah.
But there's some really good songs on there. Isn't Famine Wolf on that album?
Yeah,
it is. That's a really good song. It's also a great name. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't know for sure if Dusty's in or out now.
Oh, but it's also Protest.
Well, that's cool.
So that would be like my third time seeing them.
Nice.
Have we seen them together?
Yeah, we saw them mm-hmm. together once in Lubbock.
In Lubbock?
At Jake's back room. And Rhodey was drunk, and he was like, you know, this place fucking sucks. and he was mad because there was not like a lot of people at the venue and stuff like that. And he was kind of down on Lubbock, which I can't blame him.
Intervals announced a tour a couple months ago, and it was like them doing a headliner, and they were supposed to originally going to bring David Maxim.
Nice.
And he dropped out due to the ongoing civil unrest in Serbia.
Well, the Balkan states are known for unrest, that's for sure.
I was really going to try and make the push to go if he was going to be there, because he's one of my favorites and never had the chance to see him, and I don't, that might be his second, or would have been like his second or third time touring in the States. So that was a bummer. But Intervals puts on a great show. We got to see him.
Yeah.
Already 13, 14 months ago.
Yeah, that was a while back.
Yeah.
But that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a great show.
It really was.
A bummer that it was not more well attended for them. But
yeah, no doubt.
For the normal, it was amazing, and that was first time seeing Tesseract. Oh, Tesseract announced a small run in the U.S. In a couple of months, but they're only playing the East Coast.
Huh.
And they're celebrating 15 years of Concealing Fate. I guess they're going to play play that in its entirety.
Now that would be...
And they've got VIP things for it. And I was like, that's really sick, man.
Yeah. I would love to meet Amos again. Maybe he can recall being on Skype with me in like 2010 or 11 in that house on Elm Street, and how awkward that was for the both of us. Because I had my like Toshiba laptop there, sitting in a recliner because I didn't have another chair sitting in there, and I was like perched up trying to play and stuff, and he was like, "Oh yeah, yeah." Oh, so
hi, Ackle. I'm your biggest fan. I flew all the way across the country to see you. How are you? What was it like when you wrote that song?
Your hair is curlier than I remembered.
You're much shorter than I thought.
Holy. Meshuggah's doing a tour in April in the U.S.
Are they coming anywhere close?
Phoenix and Las Vegas, Nevada. It's like the closest that I know.
I would probably have to get airlifted out of that show for having an epileptic fit, but I'm sure that would be just another great one to see.
I definitely want to see that.
Yeah, when is it?
It's like early to sometime in April. And it's like Cannibal Corpse and Carcass, I think, are on it.
I have seen Cannibal Corpse twice. And I think both times are at like a fest thing.
Like a Warped Tour thing?
Yeah, but not Warped Tour.
No, Mayhem?
Maybe Mayhem, yeah, once. The show that I saw, The Red Chord and Behemoth, they were there too.
That's a tour, I think.
Yeah, man, The Red Chord.
Red Chord's crazy, dude.
That was awesome.
Great band.
Yeah, that's been a really long time ago, but I've never seen... Who's the other? It was Cannibal
Carcass?
Yeah, I haven't.
Yeah.
They're doing April 4th in Denver at the Fillmore. So that's...
There you go.
That's something.
Nice.
And then April 13th, they'll be in Phoenix. And then April 15th, they're doing Austin City Limits. But if you really want to take a trip, you can go to Florida on April 19th at the Youngling Center. You'll be damp, uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But you'll also be at the show. So
it's a net positive.
No, yeah, that's exactly right.
Gonna go see Ryan Adams in Santa Fe in May. He's doing a show in Albuquerque and then one in Santa Fe, so we opted for the Santa Fe date. The Lincecum Performing Arts Center right there downtown. So he's another favorite of mine, a singer-songwriter. And he was originally going to tour and come through there at the end of 23, I think. And so he ended up rescheduling it for this year. So I was looking forward to seeing that. It's just him doing a solo show, so it'll be a pretty intimate, chill vibe. So looking forward to that.
So do you feel like, and I'm really going to put you on the spot here.
Better than us?
Do you feel like he's beaten the allegations that were brought up against him? I don't even know what they were. This was like several years ago, and he went undercover for all those years.
Yeah, I mean, I think he... It could have been handled better. But he's made some recovery. Because he's done several, or at least a few solo tour runs, and then he got his band, I think the Cardinals, back together, and they did a tour together. So, you know, but he's also like, I don't know, like I discovered him like a year before he got in trouble, like 2019. And so that was definitely kind of a bummer, seeing him like drop out of the spotlight. But yeah, his output in the last couple of years has been maybe not my favorite, but he's got a pretty large body of work to look back on, and he does a lot of cool covers that like he plays, like Crazy Train and Free Bird, I think are pretty cool, like chill arrangements.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, for what it's worth, I'm going to enjoy seeing him.
So are you prepared to apologize on his
I'm here on the behalf of Ryan Adams to defend the name, deny any and all allegations.
We're going to beat this. Oh. Sorry.
God bless. Our Slow Joy is playing in El Paso tomorrow night. That's our friend Esteban Flores, also from Carlsbad, New Mexico. So it's been cool to see his rise over the last couple of years. And so I'm up in the air if I'm gonna make it down there tomorrow evening. But that would be another one.
Yeah, that's sick.
Yeah. Otherwise, Carvin Jones. Oh my God. Coming back to Las Cruces. My friend Jonathan saw Joe Bonamassa at the Rio Grande like 12 years ago.
Oh, that would be fun.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah, I would really love to go and see him.
Yeah, I think he's coming back to Albuquerque, one of the casinos, like in August.
I mean, it'd be great to hear him play. I would really rather just sit and listen to him talk.
I'm the opposite.
Smoke a cigar.
Really?
I don't love what the guy has to say a lot of the time.
I like him a lot. I think he's really good.
He's an incredible player. Yeah, he's like really, really good. He's like got a lot of knowledge too. So
I don't care about the playing. I want to hear the voice. I enjoy hearing him talk about the history of the instruments.
Yeah, he's got a lot of knowledge there for sure.
I don't know about the other things he talks about, and I'm not prepared to defend those allegations or anything else. I'm just saying I enjoy hearing him talk about like post-war Fenders.
Yeah.
We're gonna beat this.
So other than like music stuff, what have you guys been doing?
Man, I've just been working.
That's what I've been doing. A lot of working.
Yeah, just working. I haven't really played like any video games or anything. I'm just card games still. Yu-Gi-Oh! Magic. Watch a couple movies. I don't know.
So I definitely want to talk about TV, but first, Joey brought it to me earlier, you know, off the show, back in the green room, about the classification system that is coming to Commander for Magic, and I guess it's called brackets, right?
Yeah, it's like a five-tiered bracket system for... like, because it's a casual four-player format that often, like, your local game store has, like, gatherings for, and it's, as you'd expect, as, like, or what you go, you show up, everyone's got, like, a 100-card singleton deck, and they created the system because for years and years and years, they've had this, what they refer to as, like, a rule zero conversation as an expectation for starting the game, which is just like, hey, you sit down with three other strangers and there needs to be some sort of discussion on like what power level everyone's trying to play at. Like, as far as like, I just bought a pre-constructed deck off the shelf. I'm just trying to play this. So I don't really want to, you know, maybe play against whatever your like $2,000 deck offers, or does, depending. So they created like a more or less official, it's still like being like, it's in like beta as I refer to it now, bracket system, which is supposed to aid the conversation in like determining where whatever your deck you want to play is sitting relative to everyone else. So like, you can sit down with someone and say like, I'm brought my tier 3 or bracket 3 deck is that what everyone else is kind of bringing? And I was like, oh, I only have twos, so it's okay. Like, or they say, okay, so there's like useful metrics or things within the brackets that help you, can help you like modify your deck to be able to be like lower tiered. So like the middle bracket says there's like a certain category of cards that they call game changers, which you're allotted three of in your deck. So like just usually there's like some of Magic's most powerful cards in there. So they say like you're allotted up to three in this bracket three system or bracket three. And so what that sort of does now is it means that you can sit at the table and say, I'm playing a three and say, oh, well, I only have a two. Now there's like the opportunity to say, wait, okay, well, I maybe have some backup cards to put in place of these game changers such that it lowers the overall power level of my deck, but I'm still able to play with you, as opposed to what often happens, at least at locals that I go to and what I hear my friends go to, which is where you, one, there's always the potential for like bad actors, I guess. Like you can sit down across from someone you don't know and they say like, I'm playing a, before there was like a 1 to 10 scale that like was never official that people just say it, like, you know, came up with. And everyone would always say my deck's a 7. Like it's like not middle, but it's like above a focused middle ground. And what happened is like everyone's definition of what a 7 was wildly different, right? So you would say my deck's like very casual or like low power, but what that means to me relative to you is like could be totally different. So you'd have someone totally like hub stomp the table because what they believe is low power is not truly low power, like relative to this. So now there's like the brackets is meant to like help specifically pick up games for the most part, have a bit more tools to like figure out where everyone's decks are at. Now there's still like, you could still run what would be considered a bracket one deck, like as far as the list of things to check or uncheck on there, that would still be like very powerful. Like you could run no game changers and still have a super powerful deck. So it's like not like a catch-all, but it's just like another tool that's meant to help, especially new players, like people who want to get into Magic, buy a pre-constructed deck, sit at the table with their locals and feel like it's not like a totally uphill battle the entire time. So
nice.
It's interesting. It's still like being beta tested. So they're taking like a lot of feedback on like social media and all these other outlets for modifying it some. And it's supposed to like more or less hard launch alongside like some ban list changes in like April. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty cool. It's something that like people have like wanted officially for Magic for a long time. So it's nice that they're like actually working on providing that now. So
very cool.
Yeah.
So when we were talking about that earlier in the car, I had asked you like, was that a problem? Was that a problem that, what the hell was that? Was it me hitting this?
Must have been you.
Was there a problem with like people sitting down to play and there was like wide disparities in skill?
Yeah.
And you were like, yeah, that's a major problem because people don't know how to, you know, really adequately describe their cards, or people who don't have a lot of knowledge don't know what's good and what's not. But also the people that are really good tend to try to downplay what they have so that they can appear as if, you know, it's not going to be that bad, and then just curb stomp everybody. And then that's when he said that, well, you said, oh, you're right here, that people didn't have the language to talk about like the classification of their deck. And I think that's like really interesting for a few different reasons. First of all, because it kind of highlights the way in which like words that we all kind of collectively understand a meaning of can still provide like nuanced and interesting ways to describe like a obscure like system.
Yeah.
But also that it just gives us more ways to talk about the same thing that offers a little more clarity to it.
Yeah.
And so even if it
even if this particular beta test of it doesn't actually pan out and they like put it into prod, like I think it's worth chasing that down to a version that is like official, right? That you can actually say is good. It's just like a very interesting idea for, because historically, if you think about whenever you would buy precons, especially like 15 years ago, they would have like tags on them that would say expert or beginner something. And that actually doesn't really mean anything, because there was no clarification between what made something a beginner or an expert deck.
Yeah.
And it would vary widely set to set. So I don't know. It's just interesting, right? To think about.
Yeah.
Pokemon does something kind of like that with their precons, but they, the naming scheme is so confusing to me that, you know, I can't really tell it's like, you know, Battle League standard or like Battle Force Super or something. It's like, oh yeah, no, actually the standard is better than the super, you know, or something like that. Right. Yeah. It's like, it doesn't really make a lot of sense, but I don't know.
Yeah. It's cool. It'll, I believe, help in the long run. So hopefully they get enough feedback such that it gets fine tuned a bit more and will help with that. Yeah, I don't like getting pub stomped. So.
Yeah.
Pub stomp?
Publicly stomped.
Yeah, it's like
someone... You're like playing at the pub and you get stomped.
You know, just get ran over by someone at locals that either openly lied or just did not appropriately assess how strong their stuff was.
So. Yeah, plenty of experiences.
It'd be like me trying to play my current Yu-Gi-Oh deck against you trying to play your old Yu-Gi-Oh.
Oh yeah, well,
like it's we've had 20 years of.
Well, get ready for a trap hole, buddy. I'm gonna open up a can of whoop ass on this whole situation.
That back then you would win the game like turn 8 or 9 or whatever, and now you can win on turn 3 or turn 2. So.
It takes him 3 turns to win. What an idiot.
During the game, I've been secretly draining your bank account, rendering you completely useless.
It's like a Kaiba meme. It's like, who cares? I got money. Yeah. Or something like that.
Yeah, that's interesting. That makes a lot of sense. Definitely remember rolling into Arby's and Hastings and some young men, and we're trying to take on these comic book guys from The Simpsons and just getting destroyed over and over again. Like, I remember, I think I'd only gone to the Hastings one like once or twice.
Yeah, that I think I talked about ago. The last time that I did on like one of the other episodes, but yeah, it was pretty bad.
Couldn't hang in the slightest.
Yeah. the Arby's one was also crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we did that quite a bit.
Yeah, we went there a lot, but we didn't play with the older kids a lot of the times. The fact that the Arby's just allowed you to sit there for 9 hours and occasionally order a roast beef, I mean, that's really funny to me now.
Yeah, I barely remember the Arby's ones. I don't know that I ever went to one. Maybe once. I don't know.
I remember going, and I had just gotten back from like maybe Walmart or Hastings, and I had bought a fat pack of Cold Snap, which came out in 2006. So it was summer 2006 was one of the last, that was one of the first ones that I went to. Also, Corset 7 had just come out.
Yeah.
I remember, can't remember the name of the angel card, but it was like a classic angel card. Let me look it up.
Remember the name of the clown from Yu-Gi-Oh that Pegasus used? Like Saji or something like that. The Dark Clown, something the Dark Clown.
Mm, yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so I've been on a few different like rabbit holes here lately, and I will not talk about them all night because if I get started, I stop. But so two things. Severance, basically all I can watch, like all I care about.
Very good things.
Yeah, I've heard it's amazing.
It is excellent. So I've watched season one, you know, back when it aired in 2021. And season two started a few weeks ago, where episode 5 comes out this week. It's a great show. It's a little strange, but the music about it is excellent. It has got a great score. It's very well executed. The themes in the music fit so well with the themes of the writing and the show. It's a little bit funny that it's directed and produced by Ben Stiller. You wouldn't really think that, right? But it's excellent. The thing that I like about it the most, now that you asked me, thank you. But if you work in an environment that especially is like very cognizant of their corporate culture and the type of person that they want you to be at work and like the behavior that they want you, like if they have like company values and standards that are like a doctrine almost to them, mm-hmm. and you know, that kind of thing, like it resonates so well with like middle and working class people and the expectations of society on them at work. And even if you just take the show at face value, it does a great job of like articulating like just what a strange world we live in now, but also in the world of the show, right? But everything about it, wardrobe is spectacular. Got a great
hair,
cast.
Makeup,
great hair, great makeup, very cool. Dancing scenes.
Great dancing.
Great dancing. So I would really, say both of you should definitely watch that. It's great. The other thing is this strange social experiment that appears to be executed in classic hardcore, where I've been following a guild of people pursuing in-game content in WoW Hardcore for the last 2 months.
Yeah, that's really interesting to me.
And it is basically like I'm watching like Love Island or something. It's just such bad TV.
Yeah.
That I just cannot stop watching it. And they even call it season 2 because they did this in like 2019 or something, and it, you know, ended kind of early, so they're doing it again. It's crazy. I could talk about this all night. I don't want to
get voted just out of the guild.
Kind of sharing, you know, like how my spare time has been spent here lately. It's been with that. It's really interesting. Because I'll just say this, like you're in an environment where, you know, presumably streaming is your job. That's all you do. Or you're playing the game with a group of people that their sole goal is to make content. WoW Classic was particularly hard. So to get to the top level and start doing all the in-game stuff would normally take, 7 days of playtime. If you're like doing it kind of the normal way, you can do it much faster now. But like for some casual, it's going to take like 7 days playtime total, right? Which probably months. And then to get to the point where you can do the in-game stuff, take another few days of playtime, but it's hardcore. So if you die, you just lose everything. So you have this group of people that their whole shtick is like being a persona online. and they're forced into this like self-imposed, but like very isolated kind of environment where they're trying to proceed to like harder and harder goals in the game. And there's all these like social hierarchies that exist there, which are very interesting. But also there's just like the devastating loss of, if you die, you've just lost like 3 months of your life, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, like it's all still content, but yeah, like you can just see the heartbreak on their faces. Like, oh my God, I have spent so much time with this character and it's gone. And now if I want to play with everybody again, it's going to take me, you know, 7 days of playtime, which if you play 10 hours a day, it's not forever, but like, it's still a bummer, right? Like, I don't know. It's just a really interesting thing.
As an outsider, it's just like something stupid could happen. Like your internet goes out or something.
That definitely happens. Yeah.
Just like that's it.
Yeah.
Just definitely a total happens. Fluke or.
Yep.
Somebody come knocking on the door. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. So I don't, I mean, it's a strange thing to be interested in, but just like from an anthropological perspective, it is, you know, kind of enticing. If I was still in school and I still had to do like my thesis, I would probably do it on this. Like, mm-hmm. I just think it is that interesting. Plus, you know, it's cool to see people like, classic again after all this time, right? I didn't watch it at all in 2019, so, but it is also funny that they just keep like redoing classic every few years.
So, yeah,
it's 2004 again.
Dude, I'll replay Pokemon Red, Blue, Gold, and Silver 100 times over. I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
See y'all on the Dead Mines.
So, yeah, great.
Boom.
Staff of Jordan.
My YouTube rabbit hole lately has been pretty all over the place. So, Liz and I, on the way up to Albuquerque, we were talking about Chernobyl and how great that miniseries was. I haven't watched that in several years. I think I'm going to rewatch that soon. I forget what that actor's name is.
Jared Harris.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, Liz was just reading about wildlife.
Going back?
Yeah, and talking about how the Russia-Ukraine conflict, how...
They fought over Chernobyl?
Yeah, and the Ukraine has gotten it back. But there was this whole like thing about like the dogs that lived there, and they're like friends with the guards. And the guards like have built houses for the dogs and they feed them. And it's like a whole thing. And it was really sad when they couldn't take care of them during the conflict and all that. It was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember the specific weird time of my life. I guess it was early 2019, watching that and watching The Terror season one.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy show. Also starring Jared Harris.
I think I remember.
Yeah. And Jared saw the seasons of The Terror afterwards, but I didn't. I only saw the first one.
Our Jared, not that Jared.
Yeah.
Our Jared is Jared Harris. Jared Vanatta is an actor.
he's a paid crisis actor.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And then reliving my childhood by watching Tom's Tank Engine videos on YouTube and watching like behind the scenes and just learning how all that show came together back in the day. It's pretty fascinating. Like, and I think they did 12 seasons before they switched like full animation.
Uh-huh.
And just seeing like the models and just how creative they had to be with all that is just amazing. I love that.
Yeah.
And like, that was just, I just remember being a little kid just watching it over and over again. The episodes are only like 5 minutes long. It's crazy. Yeah, so I guess a half hour block, you get a lot.
Yeah, I thought that they were like half hour bits.
Yeah, no, they're like 5 minute things. Each season has like 30 episodes.
Good grief.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And My algorithm also has some Titanic clips. Watching stuff about that.
Okay. The actual Titanic or the one with Leo? And
no, just like little like History Channel clips about it. And different angles and about the various attempts to get it back and people going trying to recover it and all of that. And y'all ever mess around with YouTube? One other side one adjacent to that is learning about I guess they do it all over the world, but the sinking of boats that are out of commission to create artificial reefs.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
And they just like, you know, it's just like a video of the team that are sinking it, and they put GoPros around it and they talk about how they're doing it, and then they get off and then it shows it going under, and then they go retrieve the cameras afterwards, and then they go back a year later and it's
swarmed with completely fish covered and stuff. Yeah. Cool.
I'm sure that's pretty becoming more and more necessary due to climate change and all the other stuff going on.
Yeah. So a lot of people thought that the captain of the Titanic actually got off the boat and covered it up, that he got off. So that was like a conspiracy theory for a long time. The other,
it wasn't until 2025 that we have the knowledge.
Yeah, I've got his DNA right here. You are the father, Dylan. Or the son. you're his son. But just a fun fact is that because of the way that the top, like how the actual decks were structured and where people were staying in various parts of the ship, the people that tended to be on the surface or on the, you know, deck of the ship first were typically wealthier people. They were better off.
Yeah.
But also there was like a code of conduct that it should be primarily women and children. And they were also like classically British in a lot of ways. And so what they would do is they would send out lifeboats that they would put on like a few women and a few kids. And if nobody else would come up, they wouldn't just fill the boat up with men because they didn't want to go. They wanted to get only women and children on there. So a lot of boats went out that had like 20% of its space filled. Like they could have put, you know, a lot more people on there, but they were just actively kind of saying, you know, no, right? Mm-hmm. Which is sad. But also were some allegations that the staff and the crew actively disparaged against like class, and that they were specifically not allowing poor folks to get on to the lifeboats, which is not true, actually. There's quite a bit of evidence that says otherwise, but by virtue of the structure of the ship and where people were placed, people that were farther down or closer to the, you know, lower down in the ship as far as like, you know, from the surface, you know, towards the cargo hold and the steam engines and stuff, just happened to be poorer.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the areas that tended to fill up with water first. And mm-hmm. so they didn't obviously get to make it out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, it's just like interesting to hear those stories and like see the diary entries of people that survived. Somebody survived that was like a chief of staff in some way. I can't remember exactly what his title was. It's been a couple of years since I've read this, but he was so overcome with survivor's guilt, he killed himself over it.
Holy.
Because
people thought that, you know, he had played some part in it crashing and all this other stuff. And he didn't. He didn't have anything to do with it, but he killed himself over it. So if you're interested in the Titanic at all, the story of how it even got built up until the day it sank is really interesting. So thank you for coming to our Titanic podcast. We want to thank all of you for coming out on the waters here tonight.
Arg.
Well, that was a little more meandering than normal, but I was healing my oats. So, you know, I just enjoy talking with you two and hearing about the news of the world and what's going on in normal places.
What has been, what is, and what will be.
And I'm not going to make the same mistake that I did last time and make a promise about what we might talk about next. Because the truth is, I just don't know. Hasta luego.
Be well, friends. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.